Welcome to the Court Report. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Banghart. Coach, welcome.
Happy Tuesday.
It is Tuesday, and it is every Tuesday during the season, even though your team has already played its one game for the month and doesn't play again until February 1st, yeah. And today being January 15th, that is a long way away. So we have absolutely nothing to talk about. Also, we have nothing planned to talk about. So the next 15 minutes or so are just going to be like whatever comes to mind.
And then people will turn it off. Well, when you just said that, you know, there's nothing, when you said I haven't done anything really since that one game in February or January, I'm thinking, you know, it reminds me that I was texting with one of our friends of the program yesterday, and you know, I left on a flight to San Francisco. I left at like my alarm went off at like 3:45 on what was it? Saturday morning. I flew to San Francisco. I watched three games, went right back to the airport, took the red eye home, went right to a gym in northern New Jersey, and then right barely made it in time for practice, right? Got home around 4:30. So it was like a 36-hour day and not laying down. And I was thinking, you know, I think a lot of people in a good way, you don't recognize how much goes on outside of the lines in this business. And you know you're in the right business if after 36 hours you're still glad to be doing it.
Is it weird, though, where everybody else is in the heart of their seasons and you are?
Yeah, I just talked to my friend at Tennessee, the head coach of Tennessee, Holly Warlick, who's been a good friend of mine in the business. And, you know, they've lost three in a row. So we were just kind of commiserating about her team. And, you know, I asked her when she plays next, and she says Thursday against Alabama. And I was like, great. So I'm like tracking on certain teams because I have not have my own to track on.
There's also an advantage for you. I mean, you can go see somebody in California where maybe other people can't.
Yeah, I think the advantage really, too, is that this year in particular, I'm sorry to have to keep bringing it up, but we're going to try to get healthy. You know, it'd be nice to have practice with 10 people at it and all that. So we're going to try to get healthy, and we're also able to expand both our defensive package and kind of our offensive execution. So it allows you to focus on yourself, but I do put a lot of the recruiting in. A lot of my off-campus recruiting happens in January.
And what about I've always thought that the exam break is kind of an interesting animal because it's unique to Princeton. Harvard used to have the same schedule, but now it's unique to Princeton, and there's disadvantages, but there's advantages. Mm-hmm. And one of the advantages, I think, is you sort of, as the play, you know, if you're a player, you step back for a little bit. So all of the whatever that builds up in you, all of the angst that builds up in you over the course of a long season has somewhere to go to get, so you can get rid of that. And it's, I think, I always felt like mentally it recharges people. Mm. Even if physically it brings the season to a halt. Am I off base on that? Or?
I think there's two sides to it, you know, and that's probably true of everything. But you get the concept of, you know, you can look at your advantages or disadvantages in life, no matter the scenario. In our case, like non-scholarship, high academic Division I, you know, here I am sitting in a gym in San Francisco. And, you know, people like to see the Princeton P, the Princeton shield. People are, you know, signing in and I checked in and they said, Princeton? Wow. You know, and so yet, of course, if we lose a recruit, I immediately get disappointed that the high academic or the academic or the financial aid can be a disadvantage. So I just choose to focus on the advantages in life. And so the advantages for us in January, although there's disruptions and the competitiveness is hard to turn on and off, and the advantages for this particular team, this particular year, is that we can try to get healthy and focus in on ourselves.
So let me ask you this question, because I meant to ask you this before, but when you prepare to play, pick a random team that you played out of the league so far this year.
Okay.
Penn State.
Yep.
You're going to play Penn State at Penn State, and then you play Penn in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Is your preparation for them different in any way? Like, what is it that accounts for the difference between playing out of the league and in league? Is it, I would assume you scout teams similarly
very,
and all that. It's
yeah.
just having played against coaches and teams and players more often, you have yeah. a greater sense of what to expect.
Exactly. The player familiarity. You know, this is not a one-and-done league, you know. So the player familiarity of so-and-so on the roster again, on the scout again, you know, you've seen them, you've watched them on the floor, your team has guarded them before, versus when you go play Penn State, you have no idea the size and speed, and because all you've seen them is on film. And so in terms of the, you know, academic professorial type prep, it's the same. You know, you watch the same number of games, you break down the scout the same way, it's on the same template. But yeah, the familiarity piece is a huge piece.
It's a good win for the men's team. I don't know if you were able to follow that during your travels.
Very closely, yeah. It was great.
So that was, yeah, it was
and
great.
We had some of our players were there, you know. It's, yeah, really happy for Mitch and his guys and excited for what's ahead.
But also a big win for your alma mater in men's basketball.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit I had to like I clicked on it because I was like, for real? You know, and, you know, it goes to show Harvard's obviously had a really great run with Tommy. Games are hard to win, no matter who you are and where you are. And
Harvard, of course, has a lot of injuries, too.
Yeah. What is it? That's just a bummer. But, yeah, you play the game, you throw it up, and you play who's healthy, and Dartmouth came out with the win, so really happy for them.
So one thing I thought, I didn't really give a lot of thought to what we would talk about here this week with no games. So one thing I thought is it'd be a good opportunity for people to get to know you a little better than just the coach that they see. So I thought I would ask you a series of questions.
Okay. You didn't tell me this. This is not okay.
Right,
okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so who was your best friend when you were a kid?
Oh, gosh. Name was Colin Vandenberg. He lived right across the street. I remember I was in fourth grade when he moved in, and he was the best athlete immediately. And there was always a football game at lunch, and I was the only girl. And literally, because he was so good, after like a week, he was in charge of picking teams. And I have to say, one of the things I've learned from him was that if you're good enough, you can play. Because right away, you know, he picked me on his team at the first pick, and we were pretty dominant.
Whatever happened to him?
He went on and played. Oh yeah, he went on and played soccer at Hartwick, and you know, obviously grew up literally next door to me from fourth grade on. We had a rule in our house. My mom would always say, "You cannot dribble the basketball until 8 a.m. Because I always had Colin stop by, and he was basically daycare, and I was daycare for his mom.
What does he do now?
He plays the banjo up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'm from New Hampshire, so and then he teaches elementary ed.
So another question, I guess that's going to be in high school, but it could be before high school too, but not college, but
yeah.
Who was the best teacher that you had?
Oh, I had so many. It's such a great question. I had so many really good teachers. My ninth grade English teacher, who was also my advisor, she's like a mom, but she really challenged me as a writer to use words better, to think more critically. And then because of that, she kept putting me with, in sophomore year, she put me with the very best history teacher, and she gave me the very best science teacher, and then, you know, she gave me the very best advisor. So I went to a public high school, a Sauhegan co-op school in New Hampshire, and I am proud to say I cannot speak more highly about the educators. I had my eighth grade math teacher, my seventh grade English teacher, still remain very good friends.
What was your favorite class in college?
Oh, gosh, probably education. I took a really cool developmental ed class that talked about education reform that I thought was really interesting. I thought maybe something I would have gone into.
What you like to read?
Love it.
What are some of your favorite books? Or if you don't have specific favorites, yeah. What kinds of things do you like to read?
You
we'll
know,
go specifics also.
Yeah. Well, I read most recently the book called Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult, who's a great writer. Talks about kind of the race relations in our country. And I think it through a really fun and exciting, it's just a great book. I would recommend it for every human being, every race, every color in the United States. It's called Small Great Things. And then Beartown is this book about a hockey team and how kind of a sports team in a small,
a
lower.
Like a true story?
It feels like it's true, but it's not. And so it just kind of talks about how in a small town, a dominant sport can really, in a lot of ways, take over the economic and political environment. And so I'm from a small town. It sort of resonated a bit. We had some good teams. That was really good.
About all-time favorite?
All-time favorite, maybe The Glass Castle, a true story about if I'm talking about kind of more novel-ish, talks about a woman who starts the book with where she looks at her New York City apartment and her mom, who's homeless, is picking out of the dumpster. And it kind of goes back through kind of her upbringing and shows the resilience of strength that you have to have as an individual in this life. And then the book called The Score Takes Care of Itself by Bill Walsh, talking about the 49ers and how when he took over that operation, he cared about doing the little things. That was a formative book. The Last Man Standing is a book by Anson Dorrance. It talks about his North Carolina women's soccer. It talks about kind of his legacy there at North Carolina, which across board is awesome. Yeah, I've read a lot of really good books.
What about music?
I'm way less cool at music. Way less cool. Spotify has made me cool because they have these lists that I can click on and it says like top picks. And so I change the genre up. Every morning we listen to music in our house for our children, and we keep changing the genre. I love reggae, so that's kind of more frequent, but we try to give our kids a wide range of music in our house.
What about when you were a kid?
You know, we had a rule in our house, and when we did a lot of road trips, we drove everywhere, Florida, everywhere else we drove. We were not a flying family, and everywhere we went, it had to be a station that we agreed on. So basically, like, oldies 103.3 was, like, the best we could agree on. So that was really old. It was like the 60s at that point.
Can you imagine packing your entire family into a car and driving to Florida right now?
I know. Gosh, right. Well, then they're strapped in. So that's it's like not terrible, that thought.
What? concerts? You go to a lot of concerts?
My very first concert was hilarious. I thought I had like made it in life. You're going to make fun of me probably forever for this. So I'd never been to a concert before. And I get invited by one of my very good friends to go to the Richard Marx concert. And I couldn't have believed.
I'll be right here waiting for you.
There you go. And you couldn't have believed my luck. I show up at the concert.
Did he just like play that song like seven times?
When he played it, the piano came out of the stage. But the best part of it is that when I got there, my friend's mom bought us each a T-shirt with a giant Richard Marx face on it. And I could not have thought it was cooler in that moment. I've been to much cooler concerts since then. I've seen OAR out at Red Rocks. If you haven't been to Red Rocks
I've never been there.
Oh, right outside of Denver?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
No. Okay, so yeah.
So it's right outside of Denver, and it's basically this amphitheater.
Yeah.
And I flew out there just for the concert. I mean, it's that worth it to see a concert in the beautiful Red Rocks.
You know what OAR stands for?
No.
On a Revolution.
Oh, wow. You are like that fun fact kind of guy. And here I'm just like, oh, I like OAR.
They're good. I got some good songs.
Yeah, they do have some good songs. So that was a good concert because it was kind of the environment and saw Keith Urban at Madison Square Garden. And yeah, I don't get to do that as much.
So what about travel? Some of the favorite places that you've ever been and not like a gym somewhere in Las Vegas?
Yeah, gross. Gluttonous was Turks and Caicos. I mean, the minute you fly in, you're like 100 miles away and you see the islands and you think, this is gluttony, right? You almost feel kind of bad. But that was really a very relaxing, wonderful, special place. But, you know, when I graduated from college for the 2 years after I got out, I went one summer to go to this outdoor leadership class in Alaska because I was going to be an outdoor leadership I was going to add that to my repertoire at Episcopal where I taught. And after a week in the 3-week class, I actually said I was leaving the class because I wanted to explore Alaska. The teacher said, well, all your stuff's back in Anchorage. And I was like, that'll be fine. So I left with no money. And I got a friend who I met on the trip who was an ice hockey player at University of Michigan. And him and I ended up hitchhiking around Alaska for 2 weeks. And that was before cell phones. So I was just saying the other day, my parents had no idea what I was doing. I was over 21, so I guess they don't necessarily care, but they still care about my well-being. But hitchhiking around Alaska and seeing like literally bear catch salmon with their paws while they're swimming upstream and jumping, it actually is a fact. That was seeing the world at a place in time. I rock climbed through Joshua Tree National Park when I was in high school. That was a really special experience as well.
The Alaska thing I had no idea about.
Yeah, hitchhiked around for 2 weeks of the class. And what was neat was we didn't have any money because everything was back in Anchorage. So finally, towards the end of our trip, I got into Anchorage and we had our money. And so that night we went out for beers and pizza and showered and we had thought we'd made it.
You didn't do what my 21-year-old son does when he has no money? He just simply uses my credit card.
Yeah, no, not in Alaska, no. And it was, of course, it's light there. I mean, it's not like pitch light, right? It gets dawn, but I mean, it gets to be dusk. But to think about seeing Alaska in that way, I mean, you're staying and, seeing Talkeetna and seeing these places in the most kind of rich form was really cool.
So what, if you can go any place in the world that you haven't already been, where would you want to go?
Bora Bora.
That's a quick answer.
Yeah. Because my kids always say, Mom, I need oranges. And I'm like, well, I need to go to Bora Bora. You know, so I'm trying to, I say it like 10 times a day because I'm trying to help them understand need from want. I also lived in Paris, France for 8 weeks when I was in college. And every weekend, we didn't have Friday class.
Oh, because Dartmouth has the, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So every weekend, I would go to different Interlaken, Switzerland, or Amsterdam, or Munich, or, Barcelona. I didn't even get a hostel in Barcelona. I just figured I'd be out all night. So I really got to see Europe in a cool way, too.
That's a great thing to do when you're in college.
Yeah, and you don't care about where you're staying. Like, it's just, right now I need to stay at a nicer place than I did back then.
Was it like, sleeping on the floor and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, or you just get a hostel when you were there. Yeah, sleeping on trains.
And so, I mean, the Alaska thing is, a lot of this stuff is stuff people wouldn't have known, but like, tell me something about you that people would not know about you.
Oh, maybe that...
gosh, tough one.
That means you have to be interesting. That's kind of hard. Probably the hitchhiking through Alaska was one of the ones I would always say. I bite my fingernails. People can see that. That's not really an attractive quality for a 4-year-old woman. But yeah.
So this has been the Get to Know Courtney Banghart.
Yeah. Wow. We just rattled it off.
So anything else you want to? What else could I?
What else could you ask? Any hard questions? I think you hit them all.
No,
I think it's
hard.
Not it's, hard, just yeah.
Yeah, because
revealing.
I think that most people who listen to this or who come to Princeton games don't know you.
Yeah, that's true. It's so odd because my players know.
Right, and like the other thing is like I mean one thing I would say is like I would go out as far as to say you could disagree with this if you don't want this, but people can simply walk up to you at games and say hello and introduce themselves and you'd be open to that.
Yeah.
Because I think you like to meet the fans and the people and all that stuff. But, you know, even if people who do know you, they don't really – they know you as a basketball coach.
Totally.
And they know the public, you know, what they see in public more than anything else. So I think it's a good idea to –
that was fun.
January.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's, you know, especially in a competitive industry, you can be judged. Somehow who you are becomes wrapped into your result. And hopefully, well, I appreciate it, Jerry. Maybe it let people see that who I am is a little bit different than my result.
Are you a good cook?
I've gotten good. I wasn't good in high school. My mom did a lot for me. I've never, like, ironed. I just go to, like, dry cleaner.
I'm great at ironing.
And I know I could figure it out. I mean, I'm decently educated, but I just go to the dry cleaner. It's an expensive way to do it, I guess. But she also cooks for us, so I didn't get to learn that. And I started with, like, Blue Apron, you know, one of those meal delivery services, just to get comfortable trying different things. And now, yeah, I'd say I'm pretty good.
It's not bad. What and what's up for this week since you don't have games?
Recruiting. I'm going to Nashville tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. I've got my, you know, Tommy Frist is going to pick me up, and just such a neat family, and get to see two really good games in Tennessee. And I also had to be in Boston later on in the week. Another player up there that I had to see, and then some local games in the week. And then we'll practice. And so, yeah, it's good.
Well, exams start here on, when do exams start? Tomorrow?
Wednesday. Tomorrow.
And,
jeez, tomorrow's already Wednesday.
Today's Dean's Day, right?
Dean's Day, yeah. That's why we're off. We were off yesterday and we're off today. It's just not worth it.
And, so, you know, the academic final exam piece is in full swing. There are no games for any Princeton teams, any sport for 2 weeks. But we are here every Tuesday, so we'll be back next Tuesday. We'll have to come up with something else to talk about.
Look forward to it.
I'm sure we will. So, Courtney Banghart, thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Jerry.
And for Courtney Banghart, I'm Jerry Price. Thanking you for being here listening to the Court Report, and thanking you for your continued support of Princeton women's basketball.